The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.
Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. It's Matt Ireland hosting once again, and today I'm joined by Michael Pearson. His son Gav was on with me a few months ago, so it's going to be interesting to find out where Gav got the inspiration for his job from. So, evening, Mick, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Matt.
Jolly good.
Hope you're fine as well.
Yeah, not so bad. The weather's starting to pull in a bit now, though, isn't it? Summer's well and truly over. I think I'll have to put the shorts away now, sadly.
Well, I don't know. You used to wear shorts 24/7, didn't you?
Well, kind of, yeah, pretty much. So, I'm getting older and wiser now. Well, I like to think so. the easiest person to kid is yourself, isn't it? Obviously.
Yeah, oh, yes, definitely, mate. Definitely.
Right then, Mick. So, how on earth did you end up as a truck driver? Was it something you've always wanted to do? Were your parents involved, or how did you get into it, this wonderful game?
No, that my parents both worked in the textile mills in the area I was brought up in.
Right.
I left school. I played with like corgis and dinkies as a kid.
Yep.
Left school. When I was at school, I left and I wanted to be a motor mechanic working on trucks.
Okay.
Went to the careers department. They found me a job. And I worked with a company in Morley in Leeds called West Riding Paper Service. They were a waste paper merchants,
mm-hmm.
and they had a fleet of their own trucks.
Right, okay.
I didn't want to work on cars because I thought cars are what this is basically.
Yeah.
So I wanted to work on the trucks. And the trucks around at that time, as I left school in 1970, the fleet of vehicles they had were all Fords.
Mm-hmm.
And they were Ford Thames Traders and Ford D series.
Yeah. Were they Arctics or Rigids?
They were all Rigids at the time.
Yeah.
So I went to work in their workshop, obviously working on their own vehicles, doing this, that and the other, servicing, repairing, and basically doing everything we needed to do in the in our own house.
Yeah, yep, keeping them running.
We used to strip them down to the chassis rails and refurbish them and let them go out the workshop as brand new again.
Oh, right, crikey.
And the guy that was teaching me there was an absolute mind of information regarding lorries and trucks and stuff.
Yeah.
A typical old school guy. One of that never bought stuff new, always repaired what he'd taken off and stuff like that.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, we need to be a bit more like that in this world, I think, but it's a throwaway society now, isn't it? You get a bit of a dent in something, chuck it away and put another one on.
Unfortunately, that's the land we're living in at the minute, mate.
Yeah, very much so. So did you actually get a qualification out of all that, or was it just all unofficial?
I did 2 years of my apprenticeship. I got my driving license.
Yep.
The spanners went in the corner and out of the way driving. And
right.
I started my driving career there, actually, and the first lorry I ever drove was a 4D Thames Trader, 7.5 tonner.
Right, okay.
And that was out collecting waste paper and bringing it back to the to the yard, and then they reprocessed it, baled it up and sent it to the paper manufacturers in Lancashire.
Was it your decision to do that, or did you want to do it, or they just asked you and you never really got back underneath one?
Well, when we were quiet in the workshop, we used to go help them loading the vehicles and stuff like that, working in the warehouse and everything, and it would, the odd occasion came, oh, Michael, can you just go nip so-and-so, collect this and bring it back in.
Yeah.
And I did that, and I think basically that's what got me hooked, actually.
Yeah, fair enough. And I presume they were all would have been flatbed, so it would have been roping and sheeting the whole lot.
It was, if I can remember rightly, it had like a stake type body, yeah, like an open a tilt, but it just had the framework so the stuff wouldn't blow out everywhere.
Yeah. Right. So did it need sheeting still, or not? Or just not really?
They used to sheet the bale products, but not the waste products that brought in.
Fair enough. And I suppose as well, with the trucks at the time, your speeds weren't quite as high, so you're less likely blowing everywhere, sort of thing.
You were lucky to get over 50 miles an hour.
I mean, I've driven one Thames trader once when I took one to Bob Carter's funeral, and that was...
Oh, right, yeah.
That was hard work. it was good fun.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, good fun, yeah. But I wouldn't want to be doing that every day of the week.
No.
And then hand shoveling everything off and on, and very much a different world. So how long were you there? So obviously you got bitten by the bug there. You decided.
I left there, and I flitted about doing various jobs, forklift driving and this, that, and the other, and I ended up working for a tannery in our local village where my father and my mother worked at the time, just driving the forklift and offloading lorries, loading lorries, and that were it. Then I moved on then to working for a furniture manufacturer, a London outfit, moved up into West Yorkshire and opened a factory in West Yorkshire. And I got the job there of driving a little FG, Threepenny Bit Cab.
Right, crikey.
little furniture van. We used to get six three-piece suites in the back of it. Flipping and now we're off again delivering them to the outlets like.
Right, okay. Now, was that a Pantechnicon? I just love that word.
Yeah, Pantechnicon, yeah.
It's a wonderful word. It just doesn't get used enough.
No, that's a word of the past there, Matt.
It is, it really is.
And then I had an upgrade to a Bedford TK.
Right. upgrade, I can see some air quotes here, I think.
Yeah, it definitely was an upgrade because it was brand new at the time and it had a bigger body and we could carry about a dozen and a half three-piece suites in that. So.
Okay, yeah. Was it you and a porter, I guess? Was it for unloading?
No,
or was it just by yourself?
Myself on my own, yeah.
Right, okay.
And then what happened then? We moved on and moved on. As jobs them days, you could walk out of one place and into another one.
Right, okay.
And as you with normal, you met your mates, you spoke with your mates. Oh, I know so-and-so was wanting a driver and this, that, and this. And I got a job then delivering soft drinks.
Right.
And that was a company called Magpie Soft Drinks based in Wakefield in West Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And I was there about 2.5-3 years, and my normal run was the Sheffield area.
Yeah.
And then we did that, and then a friend of mine said to me, so-and-so's looking for a driver. And he says, oh, you'll be all right. So I went and spoke to the guy. There we go. Got myself another job.
Yeah.
and then that was delivering copper cylinders, central heating boilers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we moved on and moved on.
Were these all 7.5 tonners then? Or?
These were all 7.5 tonners, Matt, right. Yeah. And then I left there and went to work for a plumber's merchant, which I got that job through delivering to them with this copper cylinders.
Right, yeah.
And then we got married, ended up getting married to my lovely wife. And then as we got older then, my wife became pregnant. And I thought, right, we need to earn some proper money now. So yeah. I paid for my own Class 1 licence.
Right.
And that was about 1,500 quid them days.
Flipping
out. Oh, man, it seemed to take forever to get the money together to be able to do it.
I'm not surprised.
I went away and did it. There was a local tanker firm based near where we live, called Harold Wood,
mm-hmm.
who later became Tank Freight.
Okay, yeah.
and they had an old ERFA series with a 220 Cummins.
Yeah.
And a 24-foot trailer with a D-mount road tank on it.
Okay, yeah.
And they used that in the driving school.
Right.
And it had a, like I say, it had a 220 Cummins and a David Brown back to front gearbox.
Right.
So it was a good vehicle to learn your trade on.
Yeah, a bit of a baptism of fire.
There were a few noises coming out of that gearbox the first couple of days, I can tell you that shouldn't have been there.
And then once you're used to, when you get back in your car, you start doing the same thing and making noise in your own car.
Exactly.
We've all been
there. Yeah. So I ended up passed my test on the 1st of January.
Right, okay.
In 1977.
That's a good start to the year then.
Yeah, well, tests were done. There were no bank holidays at that time. New Year's Day wasn't a bank holiday at that period.
Right, okay. I suppose was it a bit quieter on the roads because it was New Year's Day? Or was it?
I can't remember, to be honest, Matt.
Yeah.
I would imagine, but that's how we got the start on the Arctics, like.
Right. So that must have been a bit different as well, driving a tanker after never driving one.
Yeah.
Was it chemicals? Or was it?
No, it was just. I just used their driving school to get my license.
Oh,
I didn't actually work there.
Right, I'm with you. Sorry.
Yeah. My wife's brother worked for a local company. He is a class one driver. I don't know if Gavin mentioned him or anything when you spoke to Gavin. He worked for a local company, a local textile company, called John Cotton.
Right.
And he said, well, I can get you a job here, Mick. Come and work here with me. And I went to see the bloke, explained, just passed my tests and everything. He says, yeah, not a problem. He says, we can put you with somebody for the first couple of days and see how you get on. And so I went with Shan's brother for a couple of days, got the hang of it. And then giving the keys to a Leyland Super Comet Arctic.
Right.
Yeah.
So was it just around the UK?
It was just the UK, time. Go on, Matt, sorry.
I was going to say, would these have been your first nights out as such on the Arctic?
First nights out, mate. Nights out.
Digs or sleeper cab?
Oh, no sleeper cabs days, mate.
No, digs.
Sleep on boards across the bonnet, resting on the windowsill. Lump of foam across, sleeping bag.
Luxury.
Oh, man. No night heater, no fridge, no coffee maker. Oh, dear. Yeah. Used to wake up in the winter mornings with your hair frozen to the windows on the inside. Oh, goodness me.
Thinking there must be an easier way of making a living than this.
Yeah, but I loved it, Matt. Yeah. I really did love doing what I was doing.
And excellent.
I used to do from our local area, Merfield, Dewsbury area, we used to go to London three times a week.
Right.
That was a big area for the company we worked for at the time. Yeah. They made sleeping bags, duvets, and they made all the fillings that went inside beds and stuff like that.
Right, okay, yeah. So quite light work as well.
We used to put, it was, some of it was light, some of it, if you were on the felt stuff that went inside the beds,
yeah,
that was quite heavy, Matt.
Right.
And it was all handball. So you can imagine a 40-foot step frame York trail, a single axle, full of these parcels of felt.
Yeah,
And it went handball to the back doors. Everywhere you went, were handball.
Yeah, I was going to say that was a box.
It was great. Everybody were doing it at the time.
Yes.
Yeah. And when you were on certain jobs and you opened that shutter and you saw all these packets of felt and they went right to the front. It went right. Okay, so you just pulled the shutter down and got on with it, mate.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not going to unload itself, is it?
It isn't, no.
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 No matter how much you want it to.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And we used to go, to London three times a week.
Yeah.
And when we were in London, there were always four, five, six of us always down there going to different destinations.
Yeah.
But we always parked up at the same place in London, down the East End.
Okay.
Down Wapping.
Yeah.
The side of the river. We got to know a guy there, a couple of guys there, and he did European transport at the time, and we parked in his yard. There were a couple of pubs nearby where we used to go, and we used to use his facilities for to have a wash and a clean up and what have you. And that's basically how both myself and Sian's brother got into European driving.
Right. Okay.
We were down there. We were down there one day, and he said to us, "Do you fancy doing a trip?" So me and Sian's brother looked at each other, and we says, "Yeah, why not?"
Had you ever thought about it beforehand, or just?
Yeah. Used to see his lorries coming and back, been to Greece or Italy or the Middle East or whatever, and speak to the drivers. That's when I first met the famous Chris Hooper.
Right. Okay.
Because Chris used to drive a truck for this guy called Dutch Albert.
Right.
And he was partnered with another guy called Peter Duggan. And like I say, we just carried on parking up there. And then one Christmas, Dutch Albert came to us and says, "You don't want to do a quick Barcelona between Christmas and New Year, do you?" So we went...
Can you just?
Yeah, why not? He says... What you're doing is you're going out empty. Well, it went to Barcelona originally. Mm-hmm. It says, what you're doing is you're going out empty. This was with the tilt as well.
Yeah.
Going down to Valencia, you're loading oranges, satsumas, and back to the UK straight away.
Yeah.
Do it in a week.
Yeah.
So we thought, yeah, easy peasy that, mate. We'll go do that. So gets down to set off the job. You're not going straight to Valencia. You're going to Barcelona first. You're tipping Barcelona, and then you're going down there. So we took a load of rags.
Right.
To a town just outside Barcelona called Sabadell.
Was it out to Dover-Calais, down through far?
Dover-Calais, Sealink.
Yeah.
And down the old national roads and what have you, because most of the motorways weren't built then. This would be in 78, 79.
Yep.
And obviously we had a Scania at the time, a Scania 110.
Yeah.
And we just took it in turns of driving and whatever. One drove, one read the map and we eventually got down there. We got into Sabadell and where do we go from here? Because we found Sabadell on the map.
Yeah.
So the next job, taxi. We got a taxi driver.
Yeah.
With a CMR. Point it to the address and ask the taxi to take us. He went, "Okay, no problem. Follow me."
Yeah.
So we followed this taxi driver, ended up at the place where we were supposed to be, paid the taxi, and that were it.
Fantastic.
Offloaded down to Valencia.
Yeah.
Found this pack house.
Yeah.
To load these oranges.
Yeah.
Up to Silla. We used to do the vet.
Yeah.
Because them days, food was transported in tilts then, not fridges.
Yep.
So then we had to open the side of the tilt up. Vet came along, checked a few of the oranges and everything. Right, okay. Fasten the tilt up, off you go, back to the UK. So that was the first trip to Spain.
And no doubt you loved it.
Oh, we both loved it.
Yeah.
We both loved it. And then we got back, and obviously it was back to our normal mundane job.
Yeah.
Going back to London three times a week.
Yeah. It wasn't just quite cutting it anymore, I guess.
No, it didn't have the same appeal, Matt.
No, I could imagine.
So at the time, my wife's father, obviously a brother's father, had his own little Bedford TK.
Yeah.
At the time, anyway, he was delivering to tiles. There was a tile factory in the local town, and they were delivering roof tiles to building sites.
Yeah.
And then he bought a DAF 2600 Arctic.
Right.
And then Sian's brother left the company we were working with. He left to go drive that for his dad.
Right.
So I was there on my own and everything. And then he ended up selling the DAF, and Davith came back to work with us at the textile outfit. And then he left. He bought his own lorry then.
Oh, right.
And then he went and he started trucking for a company that had just been put together called Plain Trucking.
Okay, yes.
Working out of Heathrow and all the airports, doing the engines and stuff like that. And I was still working for this textile company, and he were going to all these, he were on these European trips now. He was running all the airports everywhere. So I thought, I need to do something myself. I need to get out of this.
Yeah.
I did a few trips with him, and it just made me worse. I needed to get out of doing UK work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was a big international company where they were based in Dewsbury, a company called UFO.
Yes. Is it Universal Freight Organization?
That's the one, Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one, mate. They had a fridge division and a general haulage division.
Yeah.
So I went up to see the guy. I told him what we're doing, any chance of getting me feet wet abroad and this, that, and the other. The guy was brilliant.
Yeah.
He says, by all means, he says, I'll take you on. You don't know what you're doing. Just keep with a couple of my guys, and that were away there, Matt.
Yeah.
And my first ever trip with them was to Barcelona.
Oh, right. You knew the way there then?
Well, I knew the way there, but anyway, off we went down to Dover, stood on the stairs, the infamous stairs, cleared all the paperwork and everything, got the ticket from P&O downstairs, and off we were across on the water, across on the ferry.
Yeah.
Over there on his way to Barcelona.
Lovely.
But actually, it wasn't Barcelona, now I come to remember it. It was Lloret de Mar.
Ah, right.
And I was loaded with Tennent's Lager.
Who on earth wants to buy that outside of Scotland?
Well, presumably all the holidaymakers from Scotland. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In Lloret de Mar.
Do you know what? I saw some Tennent's. I was in a Russian truck stop several years ago. Yeah. And they had Tennent's Super Strength for sale behind there. And I just looked at it and thought, how has that even become a thing? Who thought to import that? And who likes it enough to warrant them keeping that?
Well, it, like drain cleaner, that stuff, wasn't it?
Oh, flipping heck, man.
Yeah.
Wow. So was that in a... I take it that wasn't in a fridge. That would have been a tilt.
It was in a box trailer.
Box trailer, right.
Just a dry box trailer, not a fridge or anything.
Yeah.
And off we went down there. Got to L'Argentière. Well, we got to Le Belou at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah.
And started queuing up the hill. The Spanish customs are on strike.
Oh, brilliant.
So we queued and queued and queued, and then we must have been there 3 or 4 hours. Obviously, this is on my first trip.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, what have I let myself into here?
What have I done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, people, the guys from the customs were working up between us, give us your paperwork, just keep your CMR. And obviously, Lige and Kara were absolutely chock-a-block.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Go straight to your delivery. We'll sort the customs out and everything.
Right.
So there were three of us running together, myself, a guy called Dick Sheard, and what was the other name? Guys, Andy, a guy called Andy from Halifax.
Yeah.
And Dick Sheard, I used to go to school with one of his sons, Michael.
Oh, right.
And when I used to go around to his house, his dad had just come back from the Middle East and done this, that, and the other, and telling us stories and stuff when we were kids, and I thought, I need to do some of this, but unfortunately I never got the opportunity to do the Middle East.
Yeah, you're just slightly too late.
Yeah, so I delivered my beer, then I went and loaded wine in Bordeaux.
Yeah,
back to the UK for Leeds, offloaded Leeds, and there we go, we're on the ladder now.
Yeah,
so Worked there for a couple of years. Then my wife became seriously ill.
Yeah.
So I ended up having to go back to the to day work in the UK.
Yeah.
I did that. My wife was very ill for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Fortunately, she mended correctly, like, because we're still together.
Yeah, that's good.
And then I went back to UFO. I spoke to the guy. I says, look, situation's changed. My wife's now back at home. And this, that, and the other. She's on the mend. And can we carry on? Yeah, of course you can. So we were off again. So yeah. I did stint number two at UFO.
Yeah. What truck were you driving?
The first trip I ever drove when I got there was a hire truck.
Okay.
And it was a Renault R340.
Oh, nice.
with a tall cab.
Yeah.
With the blue velour inside.
Nice.
Oh, man. And the space inside that cab from coming out of a Lever Super Comet.
Yes.
Day cab. In fact, it was a Seddon Atkinson sleeper cab I had.
Right.
When I left that textile company.
Yeah.
But getting into that Renault R340, I thought, wow, it was like getting out of a Mini into a Rolls Royce, Matt.
Yeah.
And then we progressed. We ended up with a Scania, a 112 Scania.
Yeah.
Did that. Lasted that for a few years. And obviously, the company packed up then.
I was going to say, I can't. I know they obviously don't exist now, but I can't remember what happened to them. I think they just finished, didn't they?
They just finished, Matt, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody you talk to, oh, who do you work for? You, oh, transport of the future, wages of the past and stuff like that. And because it did have transport of the future on top of the headboard.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Did a few local jobs and this, that, and the other, and worked for local UK only firms and company in Huddersfield, company in Brighouse, and then I kept seeing these lorries riding about our local area, JPL International, based in Bradford.
Right.
So I thought, I'm going to drive one of them.
Yeah.
So I rung them up and everything, went to see the guys with nothing yet. So, but the phone call appeared, off I went, and I started working there, JPL International. All they did were Italy.
Right, okay.
We used to load skins out of Bradford, wet skins.
Yeah.
Take them down to Salerno in Italy to the tanneries and stuff like that. And then reload stuff back,
roofage
back.
Yeah.
And that company ended up folding.
Right.
And I ended up being the last ever driver to work there because I took all the units to the auction.
Right. it's a sad claim to fame, isn't it?
Oh, man. it's happened a few times through my career, Matt.
Yeah. So that was obviously your first time going to Italy. What did you think when you went there? Did you love it straight away or...?
We used to do Italy at UFO.
Oh, sorry. Of course, yeah.
It was Italy and Spain. General Europe all over.
Yeah.
And but the fridges used to run to Malta and Cyprus and stuff like that.
Oh, right, yeah. What was your first impression of Italy? Did you fall in love with it or you hated it, yeah?
Hated it. From the first time ever going there, I hated the place.
Yeah.
But Spain, as I say, you either love Spain and you hate Italy.
Yeah,
you love Italy and hate Spain.
It really does seem to be that way with most people you speak to, and I'm much the same. But you know, if given the choice, that'd be Spain any day of the week for me. Not it. I mean, Italy's beautiful and lovely, but I just don't know why it seems to be a truck driver thing. You either like one or the other, and never the twain shall meet. Because I know Gav is a massive fan of Italy, isn't he?
Oh, he loves going to Italy, doesn't he?
He absolutely loves it, yeah.
Yeah, and he's been going to Italy since he was knee-high to a grasshopper.
Yeah.
Because I used to take him with me loads of times.
Yeah.
And I always remember one trip with Gavin. I think he was about 11, 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And we went, when I worked for a company called Edwards International,
Yeah,
based in Dewsbury, but that were a small family firm. And what a lovely company to work for that. That was where Maru International was formed.
Right, okay.
Because the guy who owned Edwards International set up Maru as a forwarding division to find work for his own vehicles.
Okay.
So anyway, we were at JPL, that packed up, and obviously ended up, the guy who worked in the office at JPL was now working in the office at Edwards International.
Right.
I was out of work at the time. Went to the local unemployment office.
Yep.
And spoke to this lady behind the counter. And by coincidence, this lady behind the counter was Steve Taylor's wife.
Right.
Who was the transport manager at JPL, who now works for Edwards International. When she asked me, what do I do? I said, well, I'm an international truck driver.
Yeah.
She says, all right, and you're looking for work? I said, yeah. She says, one moment. And she went away and she made a phone call.
Yeah.
And she come back, she says, give me a bit of paper. Go down here, speak to Stephen. This guy called Stephen. I went, Stephen. And she says, yes, Stephen Taylor. I went, oh, Stephen Taylor from JPL. She says, yeah, he's my husband. I went, oh, bloody hell. Small world.
Serendipity. Anyway,
exactly, mate.
Yeah.
Exactly. But so I went down and saw Stephen. He went, hello, Michael, how are you doing? I says, I'm out of work. I've just spoke to your wife, Lynn, at the unemployment office. And she told me to come and see you. She says, that's right. There's a job going here, Michael, if you want it.
Fantastic.
Went, not a problem. She knew my worth ethics and stuff like that. I knew I could get on with job and what have you. And,
yeah.
And that was it. And I was there for 5-6 years.
So was that much the same? Was it mostly Italy for them?
No. That's when I found my other nemesis. that was Germany,
the fatherland. Well, so what sort of year would that? What year would that have been then? Would it still have been separated, east and west, or was it?
Yes, it was just as the borders were coming down.
So kind of late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah,
late 80s. Well,
what time would it? What would it be?
Oh God.
I can't remember, Matt, to be honest. 86 or something like that, wasn't it? Like that when the borders came.
The wall came down in, I should know.
Yeah, that's it. The wall came down, yeah.
But
we were running out there. We were going to the former Eastern Germany with a lot of textile machinery and wool. We used to do a lot of wool out of Bradford. Went to East Germany and Germany.
What did you think of East Germany when you first went there?
It was like stepping back in time.
I can imagine. Was it still like cobbled streets? And
Definitely.
Tremants everywhere.
I can remember going to this mill, spinning mill. We used to take raw wool there. And as soon as you got there, like customs had all been done. You got to this mill and you used to go to the office, the reception. Can I book a telephone call to the UK?
Yeah.
Right, what time would I says? You say whenever it's appropriate. Right, come back at 2 o'clock, and you'll have a line to the UK.
Yeah,
and that's how we went. But it
seems crazy to someone like me who's never, you know, been in that situation. But I know after like writing my book on Kepstos and them saying the same in Russia. You know, you had to go and book.
Yeah.
Book a line to make a phone call. Just in this day and age, we can speak to anybody at any side of the world instantly.
Yeah.
But then, you know, how different and how things have changed.
Yeah, as it happens, we were talking to a guy in a supermarket last weekend, me and my wife.
Yeah.
And my grandson, Harry, is actually working in America at the minute.
Yeah.
And he actually called us while we were in the supermarket and we got talking. It says, and he must have heard us talking about being in America and that. He says, isn't it marvellous? He says, you're in a supermarket here. You've got a thing in your hand and you're talking to the other side of the world.
Yeah.
I says, it's amazing, mate. Technology.
Yeah, yeah.
It is, Matt.
Yes.
So we did that. And then we had a... I was coming back from Germany. I'd loaded in Belgium one day. And this was at Edwards International.
Yeah.
And I got back to Dunkirk. I must have been... I'd worked a good solid 12, 14-hour day. By the time I got to Dunkirk,
yeah,
it was 8, 9 o'clock at night. I thought, if I catch tonight's ferry, I'm going to be working till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I thought, Michael's going to bed.
Yeah,
so he's had enough today.
Yeah.
So we did. We went to bed, got up next morning on the first boat out of Dunkirk, gets into Ramsgate, couldn't get on the dock in Ramsgate. The boat,
right,
the ramp wouldn't come down on the ship,
right,
problems with the ramp, so we're bobbing about in the harbour in Ramsgate, sorry.
Yeah.
And at this time we just had mobile phones fitted in the lorries,
right,
so right, everything's got the go ahead, we can now leave the vessel, downstairs into the lorry. I'm just coming down the ramp on the lorry, guy says to me, phone goes, this is Stephen, the transport manager. Oh, you do get up, do you? I says, what are you trying to say? He says, I've been trying to call it. I says, whoa, steady on. Why didn't you catch the boat last night and this, that and the other and what have you? And so we had a bust up.
Right.
Drove the lorry straight back to Dewsbury. I was fuming. Didn't do the deliveries in Leicester. Straight back to Dewsbury. I says, walked in the office. I went, you and me downstairs. And that was where the owner was in the downstairs. It was the owner's wife because she was running the company now because he'd passed away, the owner.
Yeah.
And we had a big set too.
Yeah.
A massive set too. And this, that, and that. And that was the beginning of the end of me at Edwards International.
Right.
So, one of the guys that worked at Edwards International were working for Bowler Logistics.
Yeah.
From Dagenham. Mm-hmm. Not Dagenham. Basildon.
Yeah.
A guy called Phil Bowler ran the company. Head office was in Essex.
Yeah.
They had a depot in Bradford, depot in Manchester, depot in Birmingham.
Right.
And we had our own depot in Alicante in Spain.
Right.
And while I was at Edwards, I met my best friend. And this guy, Kenny Wheeler, he worked for Bowler at the time out of Bradford.
Yeah.
We used to meet each other every Sunday night on North Sea for his this, that, and the other. And I said to him one night, any jobs going at your place, Kenny? And this, that, and this. He says, well, I can give you Martin's number. And because Martin was one of the guys that formed the Maru division of Edwards International.
Right, okay.
He'd had a fallout with the other director and he went his separate way. And Maru went their separate way.
Yeah.
So I went and saw Martin at Bowler Logistics.
Yeah.
I've nothing at the minute, Michael, but when anything crops up, I'll give you a shout.
They had a smart fleet, didn't they, Bowlers? At dark blue and yellow, weren't they, I think?
No, pale blue, red and...
Oh, yes.
Red,
sorry.
And dark blue stripe on the side.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
they did look smart.
Yeah. All Scanias, there's a couple of wagon and drags, Megas. They were doing Spain all the time and whatever. So Martin rang me one day, Michael, there's a job going if you want it. Yeah. I mean,
perfect. So
that's me now working for Bowler.
Yeah.
Now running Spain all the time.
Lovely.
So back on the Spain, loving the job.
Yeah.
We used to go out with, they had a contract with a Swiss company. Who imported cloth?
Yeah.
Just normal cotton cloth, polyester cloth. They imported it from India and it all came into the UK via Antwerp.
Right, okay.
So we'd go out and do a groupage run to Belgium, Holland, back to Antwerp, load cloth, back to England.
Right.
And then that cloth went to Italy, to Spain. It went all over, did that cloth for this company.
Right.
And, that's what we did. We used to go out, and then we got a job. We'd tip the Benelux countries back to Antwerp, load cloth for Italy, tip Italy, Lord Italy for Valencia area,
right,
in Spain.
Yeah.
Alcoy, Ontinyente, all around that area.
Yeah.
Because that was a big textile area.
Right.
And we were loading cloth there. And then we had a job loading out of a little town called Ibby with toys for Toys R Us.
Okay.
And that went on, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. That was a cracking job as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, the company ended up being for sale. Hey Pollock.
Yes.
Which was owned by Knight Freight.
Right.
They had a depot in Basildon across the road from Bowlers.
Yes.
And the guy from Basildon approached Phil Bowler, can I buy Bradford depot off you? Because Bradford depot was that busy and making that much money, it was subsidising all the other depots. And he says, no, if you want to buy Bradford, you buy all the lot.
Right.
So, no, I'm not buying all the lot, just want Bradford. Anyway, we carried on doing what we were doing and everything, and loading and tipping and loading Alicante down Spain, parking the trailers at the weekend in the yard in Alicante, up to Benidorm.
Yeah.
Weekend in Benidorm, as you did. And
terrible. What a nightmare.
What? This international driving job was horrendous, mate.
It sounds it.
And anyway, eventually this company, Knight Freight, bought the whole shebang of Bowler Logistics.
Right, okay.
There was some skullduggery going on underneath. Because the guy who ran the depot at Bradford was well in with this guy. And it all turned out that they wanted it just for the work.
Yes.
But the work, the textile work that we did out of Bradford belonged to this guy, Martin Webster.
Right.
Who was the ex-partner from Maru.
Right.
And he was well in with a guy that run Transmec in Thurrock.
Yes.
So they did a deal and everything and what have you, and spoke to her. It were all undercovers and everything. And then when the day came, when A. Pollock wanted to take over and, right, we're moving in and moving out. And then we were out of work as drivers, but they caught a big cold on that job, did A. Pollock, because all they got out of it were 6 lorries.
Flipping egg.
They didn't get any work. They didn't get the warehouse in Bradford because that had all been signed over to Transmec all underhand and everything. And, yeah. Oh, it were
the joys of doing business, eh?
Yeah. But that's transport. A lot of stuff were all done underhand, and
Unfortunately, there's a lot of nefarious characters involved in transport. Yeah. Sadly, as we well know.
That was that. Then that was the end of my international career.
So you thought?
So anyway. Gavin, when we were at the Bowlers, I got Gavin a job working in the office.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's told you this when you spoke to him. Myself and Sian were on holiday. Gavin says, oh, I've left Bowlers, Dad. I went, go on, right, okay. He says, I've got a job driving. Well, I didn't want him to be a truck driver, Matt.
Yeah.
Because of all the stuff I'd seen and gone through and everything.
Yeah.
And I never spoke to him for a few weeks. and it was horrendous. But that day, that him getting that job was the making of him.
Yeah.
So he's ended up at this local haulage company, just on a 7.5 tonne of 4 cargo.
The Reg Naylor, I think.
Naylor. That's the one, Matt.
Yeah.
So he's on there doing a bit of this, bit of that. I went to work for Jeffries at Otley with the Green Daffs.
Yes.
I did a couple of weeks for them, and then I couldn't handle that. I told them to stick it. and then I did a bit of this, a bit of that. And then I ended up, I went to see John, the guy who owns Reg Naylor's with his brother, Kevin.
Yeah.
I said, is it out doing, John? I'm out of work. And he said, I'm not at the minute, mate. He says, but I've got some irons in the fire.
Yeah.
This is so stay with me on that. So I did a bit of casual for a bloke. It was my daughter's fiance at the time. He was a wholesale butcher.
Yeah.
And I did a bit of casual work delivering meat to butcher's shops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
In various sizes of lorries. Did that. And then I got a job then working for Reg Naylor.
Yeah.
I went to see the guy. He says, right, Michael, this is just potter about the yard this morning. He says, there's two brand new Iveco Eurostars being delivered this morning. He says, yeah. One of them's yours. He says, and what you're doing is you're going over to a new glass factory, St. Gobain at Eggborough.
Yeah.
In East Yorkshire. He says, you're going to couple up to a glass inloader trailer. He says, and you're going to start delivering glass.
Right.
I went, right, okay. he says, we've got one of our lads over there, and he's done it a couple of weeks now. He says, and he'll show you how to go on.
Yeah.
I went, right, okay. Oh, what have I let myself in? It's delivering glass. I've seen these trailers all about Germany, you know, yes. Offergeld and stuff like that. Pulling glass trailers and these inloader trailers. Funny, weird shape of the thing.
The elephant trailers.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
About 6 inch off the floor.
Yeah.
So, anyway, off I goes to Eggborough. Spoke to this guy at Eggborough. I said, introduce yourself. I says, Dave Kirby. He went, yeah. He says, hello, Mick, how are you doing? Well, I've known Dave Kirby from years ago, going to London. And he used to park with us in Wapping. I went, bloody hell, Dave, how are you doing? And this, that, and other. And then we got started reminiscing and this, that, and other. And then he showed me how to operate this trailer.
Yeah.
And that was it. We were off delivering glass all over the UK.
Yep.
Great job. Fantastic job. Loved it, Matt.
Yeah.
Everywhere you went, you were inside. You delivered inside.
Perfect.
sometimes your lorry was still inside after you dropped the stillage of glass off. Sometimes it went outside, but it was straight in line to back in under the empty one.
Yeah.
But you worked inside everywhere.
Lovely.
Operated. You never offloaded any of that stuff outside.
Yeah.
So, yeah, did that. I did that for about 5-6 years. Great
right.
job. Fantastic job.
Just around the UK?
Just around the UK.
Yeah.
And then Gavin, obviously, we got another lorry. Gavin jumped on the same bandwagon.
Yeah.
So Gavin was just over 22, I think 22 or 23. He's ended up with a brand new Eurostar, a glass inloader, and he's doing what he's doing, and same as myself. And we carried on. And then I ended up leaving. I got me European itchy feet again.
Yeah.
I went and did a bit of European work for a guy. And then I ended up, Guardian Glass, a massive American company.
Yeah.
Ended up building a factory in Goole.
Right.
And I thought, here's my opportunity, back on the glass. So I spent weeks and weeks and weeks trying to get in touch with these people at Guardian Glass. Anyway,
yeah.
I eventually got a name. We don't carry the glass ourselves. We use a company called Liftrans.
Right.
Based in Luxembourg.
Yes.
Because Luxembourg is a massive glass-producing country.
Right.
And this Liftrans is owned by Adam Offergeld in Germany.
Right.
And partly owned by Luftrans, which
yes.
is Cargo Lux, the big cargo airlines out of Luxembourg Airport.
Yeah.
It was a joint venture between them. So they put me onto a guy there, and I spoke to this guy, and I became the first employed British driver there.
Right.
I started the job when the factory was up and before the factory was up and running. I got the job. I got Gavin a job there, and I got my friend Dave, who worked for Reg Naylor as well, on the glass.
Yeah.
I got him a job there. And both Gavin and myself then, we ended up being driver trainers.
Right.
Because we knew how to operate the equipment. I went to Luxembourg on a training course and brought a wagon back. And for the first maybe 3 or 4 months of that job, we worked solely out of Luxembourg.
Right, okay.
We were double manning, training drivers how to use the equipment. When they were trained, they'd jump in. We'd get over to Luxembourg, new lorry there on British plates. They'd jump into that, come back, and we'd work in the UK with them. And then we'd carry on driver training, driver training, driver training.
Yeah.
And then we ended up running all over Europe. Ireland was a big market. Gavin did a lot to Italy at Reg Nailers on the glass.
Yeah.
And then I became a shop steward.
Right.
Worst thing I ever did, Matt.
Right.
And we had a guy running lift trans there. He came from Wincanton. And he was the transport manager. He was the office manager. He was the depot manager.
Yeah.
And we kept saying, I was a driver spokesman, and like I say, the go-between between the drivers and the management, any problems we were having, any things that needed sorting out, we used to go there. And we kept getting told the same and same answers, Matt.
Yeah, and, fobbed off.
Basically, Matt, yeah. Basically. So I was in there one day. We're having a monthly meeting, me and the other shop steward, and I'd had enough. I just had enough, and I just put my hand in my inside pocket and I threw my resignation on the table.
Yeah.
He says, "What's that?" I said, "That's my resignation. I've had enough." What's brought this on? I says, "You have." He says, "How do you mean?" I says, "You have." I says, "Because we've been coming here every month, every monthly meeting, and we've been telling you this, that, and the other, and you've been telling us the self-same answers. Nothing's been getting done." I says, "I've had my fill. I've had my fill of it." I said, "That's my resignation. As of next Friday, I'm gone."
Yeah.
And I just closed my diary, left the table and walked out.
Yeah.
Left the other shop steward there with his mouth wide open.
I mean, that must have been quite a tough decision as well, because you love the glass job and going across Europe. It's kind of like getting rid of almost like the perfect job, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, brilliant. So anyway, I'm on my last week there at Lift Trans, and I bumped into a friend of mine, a long, long, long time friend of mine. He was working for TSA, Transport
Saint-Honneur,
out of Saint-Omer.
Yeah.
So I bumped into him. I said, "How are you doing, Steve? That list, that, and the other." And I said, "I'm looking for a job. Is it out doing?" He went, "Ring that number. I have to speak to so-and-so. Tell him I've told you to ring him." Okay. So I did. I rang him. Come for an interview. So on the Friday I left, I called at TSA's depot in Leeds.
Yeah.
They operated 25 trucks out of there.
Right.
Went to see this guy. I told him who I was. I've spoken to my friend Steve, and he says, "Right, there's a job here for you." He says, "On Monday morning, Steve will meet you. Or you can go meet Steve."
Yep.
"You go out to Saint-Omer, speak to the guys in Saint-Omer. I'll email them and tell them all about you and everything." And off we goes. And I ended up driving a left-hand drive Magnum.
Was it your first left-hand drive truck?
It was my first left-hand drive truck.
Yeah.
And I thought, Jesus, what have I done here? Steve, in fact, I drove Steve's truck.
Yeah.
He drove it to Leicester, and then I drove it from Leicester down to France.
Yeah.
And he shouted and bawled at me, "Get over that white line, get over."
"Get over to the left. More."
Oh, what a day that was.
Yeah. But,
it took me, I ended up, Steve, when we got to Saint-Omer, Stephen got a brand new one, and I ended up with his one.
Right.
So off we goes, blah, 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 blah. Gets down there the second week. "You fancy going to Barcelona, Michael?" I went, "Send me wherever you want to go, wherever you need me to go. I'm here to do what you want me to do."
Yeah.
"Right." I says, "I can't go this week because I haven't got all my gear in."
Yeah.
I says, "Let me go home this weekend. I put all my gear in together and everything." So went back to Saint-Omer on the following week. Trailer's loaded off. I went to Barcelona.
Okay, I think we're going to have to leave it there, Mick, for now, because the time is flying past. But what we'll do, we'll come back next week and carry on with the rest of your story, because it's been fascinating. So we'll catch up with you next week.
All right, mate. Take care, mate.
Cheers, Mick. Speak to you soon. With you.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.